Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
My goodness, it's me and a mysterious bald stranger.
Hi, everyone. I came back.
He came back. People were getting worried, man. They thought Nick was my new best friend or something.
Oh, no. I don't want to sound too negative, like Nick is a bad person. No. Nick and I are alternating weeks now, and of course, with our E3 coverage, things got a little wonky.
Yeah, well, that was largely my fault, because I forgot I'd had a dental appointment like an hour before we were supposed to do our last one. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, we had to skip one.
Exactly.
So now Jack's back. Everything's fine. We're all cool.
Everything's cool all the time. And we have an exciting, hopefully, topic today, which is the specialized game versus the kitchen sink game, a game that utilizes one core mechanic and a game that has a lot of different tiny mechanics.
Almost getting back to that whole debate thing we used to do.
A little debatey. Though I guess in a typical slightly Civil War fashion, it all depends.
Pretty much. What was it specifically that brought this topic to your mind, Jack?
I was playing a little indie game called Tip Top, and
I'm not familiar with it.
It's an adorable little game. It's a rock climbing game actually, and the game is all about maintaining and working on your grip strength as you make your way up these procedurally generated mountains.
I see. That's weird. I googled Tip Top and most of the results were cootie catchers.
What's a cootie catcher?
You know, it's that thing you fold with paper in school and you like...
Oh, yeah.
Thing, and the girls use them to tell fortunes.
Do you like me? Yes or no? Y-E-S.
Yes, and apparently some people call them tip-tops, according to Google.
Oh.
Please confirm, chat. What do you call that thing in your part of the world?
Maybe.
I didn't know they were called... Cootie catcher is just a name I heard recently. I always just called them things. Paper fortune teller things.
Ooh, paper fortune teller. Yeah, and then it's like, okay, we're on this one, so now you have to choose A, B, or C, and then you choose C... And that's your fortune, or that's like the person you are supposed to marry or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I found the Steam page for Tip Top now, and it looks quite intriguing. Because I was saying to you before we started recording, I'm actually a keen indoor rock climber myself.
Oh.
I haven't had much chance to do it since the kid was born, but it's something I'd very much enjoy.
So you know all about maintaining grip strength and using the little powder bag?
Oh, yes. I literally have my own powder bag. I'm that far gone.
Is it embroidered?
No.
A B, C on it?
No, it's just about securing your points of contact and pushing up with your legs. Yeah. And I've thought it would be an interesting game thing to work into a game mechanic, and this looks pretty much like how I pictured it.
And it is. It's really fun, and it's very engaging, and it's really the interesting part is like every time you dip your hands into the chalk, you regain stamina for that grip, but you lose, instead of having 100% stamina, now you have 80% stamina. So like it regains your wheel, but it shortens the wheel.
That is how it works.
It's really fun and it's very engaging, but only for a short time. And I found myself really losing interest in it after a while because it didn't give me anything else. It got more challenging, which is a good thing. But if that rock climbing mechanic were folded into a larger game, and just one of the gameplay mechanics amongst many, I think I would have enjoyed it more.
So if it was in like Breath of the Wild or something.
Well, I think that's a great example of a kitchen sink game that does it very well.
Yes. But if it was in a larger game, then it might not be able to put as much work into focusing on the fully recreated single experience of climbing things, which I guess is the recurring issue that we're probably going to hit up on a lot.
Yeah.
Because you can take one thing and like really, really focus on it, do it really well. Mm-hmm. Or you can do lots of things and do them all kind of okay. And I guess it depends on what people want in life. I'm immediately thinking, just from recent history, of Biomutant.
Oh my.
Yes. Did you play Biomutant?
You know what? All of the reviews seem to have a general consensus that it wasn't worth it.
it really wasn't. But it's a classic example of a game that does everything a little bit and nothing particularly well.
Okay.
I remember saying about the game, it should have picked something to focus on. That's probably why people don't like it so much. Because, you know, I'm a big fan of primary gameplay loops.
Oh, I do know that about you.
That's my focus in game design. Mm. And to my mind, even in a kitchen sink game, you need to have a very strong core. Okay. You know? Something that everything else can sort of branch off.
Sure.
And it can be just something like exploration, like Breath of the Wild. Mm.
Everything is a branch of the greater exploration tree.
Yes. When we talk about doing lots of things blandly, Biomutant is a bad example. But there are games remembered as classics, even, that take that approach. Red Dead Redemption springs to mind.
Oh, okay.
Red Dead Redemption 2. Mm. Is there any one thing Red Dead Redemption 2 does well? I would say no.
Okay, not in a gameplay sense, but Red Dead Redemption 2 does the setting really well.
Okay.
And I know that's kind of a bullshit out, but like the overall feel of Red Dead Redemption 2, you understand the setting and situation you're in. It feels cowboyish.
But that overall setting is created by no one single ingredient.
Right.
Right. You're a gunslinger, so you've got gun combat, you ride a horse, you can play poker in a bar if you're into that. A saloon, rather.
Yeah.
Cowboys don't go to bars unless they're hitching horses on them.
Hey, yeah, well, no, and you can camp, you can hunt, you can fist fight, which is just the worst feeling gameplay controls in the entire game.
Yeah, and none of those things alone would carry it. Mm-hmm. None of those things by themselves would carry a game. The gunfighting is extremely generic. Mm-hmm. The even just like basic movement physics are kind of fucked in Red Dead Redemption games.
Yeah, it has that like every time you push forward, your character kind of like lurches. Oh yeah, it feels bad to control in general. I agree.
Another example might be Skyrim.
Yes.
Lots of things in there. Everyone talks about how full of stuff it is. But if you just like look at any one thing, it's just kind of blur. The combat immediately leaps to mind.
Yeah, all combat. Yes.
Combat, the character animation, the AI. People disappearing into staircases.
Right. The enemy design is relatively generic.
But those games are remembered as classics. There are people who reinstall Skyrim on a like annual basis.
Yeah, as they should. It's a fantastic game that can be played multiple times over and over again. It was Netflix before Netflix. We want more rather than better. Is the key of now and you, let's see. On the flip side of things, of course, we have classic games that only do one thing incredibly well. Portal is the prime example.
An excellent game, very highly focused on its central puzzling mechanic, because it is a very strong and original mechanic to base a game around, like your climbing thing. It's an utterly unique mechanic.
Ooh, yeah,
I would say solving puzzles with portals.
But even if we look at a game that uses a generic mechanic but only focuses on it, like Doom 2016, that is another example of only combat, only shoot bad guys.
Well, it was kind of innovative, and then they brought back more of a retro vibe to it with focusing on traversal and verticality. But yeah, it was what you can do if you commit yourself to focusing on one particular flavor of experience, I suppose.
Sure.
So, yeah. Sometimes it's good to focus on one thing, and sometimes it's good to do lots of little things. Debate over. Super chats now, please. Give us money. No. we've got to mention, wow. Yeah, if we do read out the super chats towards the end of the debate, and we do like being supported by things like that, so please bear that in mind.
Well, and I'm seeing someone in chat actually right now mentioning something that I think is a good example of can really work, but also makes things difficult, which is Celeste. Celeste is a beautiful and wonderful game.
That focuses on one thing.
Exactly. Just platforming. That's it. Hard as balls, 2D platforming. But it is possibly inaccessible to a lot of gamers because of its difficulty. It has a great ramp up, but if we compare that to something like the original Super Mario Brothers, those games had waves. Things would get difficult. You would have an easier level, difficult level, easier level, which makes for an overall more enjoyable experience.
Well, of course, doing the one thing versus doing lots of little things could equally apply to difficulty levels.
Ooh.
You could focus on one difficulty level, so it's continually hard, or you could be a more accessible drift around sort of affair, as you say. And I think what you sort of hit the nail on the head here in that the focused gameplay style is a niche gameplay style. And the broad gameplay style is intended for broad appeal.
Ooh.
That's all it is, really. And I think it's also the case that the focused gameplay style is benefits more from shorter play times. And whereas the everything approach is the sort of thing you want to settle into for 4 hours on a lazy Sunday.
Ooh, that's a really good point.
It's the long term, it's like hot bath versus shower to clean off a specific degree of filth.
Hot bath versus washing your hands.
There you go.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Sometimes you just want to zone out. And I'll say that for Red Dead Redemption 2. It's an excellent game for zoning out on.
Right? I'm just going to head off into the desert for a little bit and see what I can do. Absolutely. Hmm. Absolutely. I think that's a really good point. And one of the things I think that makes Portal, and I know you and I have talked about this before, but one of the things that makes Portal such a classic is that you can beat it in a half an hour. It does not take a lot of time investment.
I was bored the other day. I had a window in my schedule. I just reinstalled Portal and played through it just for nostalgia's sake.
Right?
And had fun.
Because you can. And that's why maybe, and I still have Tip Top installed, but I do go back to it every once in a while just because it's such a strong gameplay loop. The only issue is it's just one line and it's just one mechanic, and so I do get bored so very easily. So yeah, I'm only there for that short amount of time, then I move on to something else. That maybe sounds more damning than it actually is.
I have literally categorized my personal Steam game collection into time killer good and not time killer good. The stuff that's time killer good is the games I like that you can just zone out on.
Okay.
And it's just always fun to bring up and just mess with in the background while you're doing something.
Okay.
But the stuff I categorize as not time killer good is something that if I'm going to play, I want to devote all my attention to while I'm playing it.
Okay. So give me an example of both.
Well, let me bring out my Steam list here. Oh, fuck, I'm still logged into the Escapist Steam list.
Oh, get out of here.
I'll work on that. But just off the top of my head, Stardew Valley, for example, would be in my time killer good category.
Okay.
Subnautica, Nathan Lynch just brought that up.
Mm-hmm.
That's just something. That's just a fun to bathe in, literally. if I'm in the mood for that sort of thing,
right?
A bit of exploration and processing my way up the tech tree and mapping.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Whereas, hang on, I'll get my favorites list. Dark Souls is on my always good to kill time list. Oh, look at that. First game on my good but not time killer good list, Alien Isolation.
Oh, so that's a game that you feel like you really need to focus on to play.
Yeah, it's not something I'd zone out to play. I feel like I'd really need to be in the mood to want to go out of my way to play that.
Sure.
And we've got stuff here like Black Mesa, the Half-Life remake.
Gotcha.
Oh, what else we got here? We got Cave Story. Haven't played that in a while.
the classic indie Metroidvania.
We got Disco Elysium on here. That's something you'd need to bring your smart person brain to.
Your smart person brain and a notebook.
Yeah, you gotta read. You gotta get some fucking reading done when you're playing that.
Absolutely. I saw a couple of people in chat earlier mention Titanfall 2, and I would put Titanfall 2 in the good kitchen sink game because it does a really great job of breaking up the mechanics, the wall runs, the basic shooting, the Titan shooting. It adds a lot of different elements that it keeps your attention over and over again.
That does a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Oh, and Undertale is on my not time killer good list. Because Undertale is something I really want to focus on when I play it. Focus on the feelings, the emotions, man. Yeah, Titanfall 2 is a good game. People should talk about it more.
They really should. Titanfall 2 was phenomenal and a phenomenal experience.
Fun to play. And speaking as a narrative specialist, really surprisingly good story. Well written.
I'll be honest, I don't quite remember the story, but that's where you and I different.
Well, that's you, isn't it?
Yeah, I know.
You're not a story guy. You never pay attention to where it matters.
But you get in a big robot and the robot punches things. It's awesome. So we can both have our game there.
You know, the ironic thing is that the giant robots were probably my least favorite part of Titanfall 2.
Really?
Yeah, because you get in one and then it's just a first-person shooter, but you move like you got fucking ball and chains strapped to your feet.
Right, because you're in a giant robot, and that's awesome.
Yeah, but when you're in a giant robot, you're mostly just fighting other giant robots.
Mm.
I mean, if you could just like lord it over little tiny peasants, crushing them like ants beneath your feet.
Feel your awesome power.
Bring up an enemy that's like got the same powers as ours, it just cancels it out, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. That's fair. And I think a lot of these kind of like shorter niche games, like you said, they go ultra indie, they go short, or they go mobile. I know like a lot of very like one specialization games are now mobile games.
Well, yeah, because if they're only doing one thing, chances are they're fairly simple to play.
Exactly.
Not too much to tutorialize.
And really good for short bursts.
Because that's another thing to be said for that sort of gameplay style. Easy to pick up.
Ooh.
I mean, when you're doing a broad thing, that sort of demands a certain investment, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta be in the sort of mood to be patiently learn all the mechanics.
Correct. And be tutorialized to and have them come up within context while you're playing. Again, I think it was incredibly wise of you to say it's all about time and the time you're willing to put into a game. I know I've been picking up a lot of did you play Dunk Lords?
Can't say I did.
I was a big fan of the NBA Jam games, the very cartoony basketball game back in the day.
Yes, I'm bringing it up now. That sure is a cartoony basketball game.
And it's awesome. I mean, it's called Dunk Lords. It's basically NBA Jam without the You're on Fire mechanic. But it's very simple. It's very fun, but not necessarily there for long stretches.
And counterpoint, there was a freeware indie RPG Yeah. Where you play as Charles Barkley.
Oh, what was it? Super Shut Charles Barkley.
I think it's called Shut Up and Jam Gaiden.
Yeah. I do remember that existing. Yes.
And I'm looking into it. It's astonishing how much work went into that for a free game.
Well, wasn't there like a sequel too that they like crowdfunded, but it got shut down? Oh, there's a whole history there.
Right, yeah.
What's it called again? I want to get a tab open so I can try to play it later.
Look, it's got a Wikipedia page. It's called Barkley's Shut Up and Jam Gaiden. jokingly presented as an unofficial sequel to Barkley's Shut Up and Jam, which was a generic basketball game on the Sega Genesis, mm-hmm. and Space Jam, featuring JRPG-styled battles and dungeons. Yeah, that's something worth investigating if you're interested, but it's a gotta commit some time to it sort of game.
Oh yeah, no, that's my next deep dive. No, Chad, I'm not thinking of the Shaq Fu sequel. I actually played that. What an embarrassment.
I just want to read the first paragraph of the plot of this game.
I'm so ready.
The game starts off in 2041, 12 years prior to the main part of the game, in post-cyberpocalyptic Neo New York. Charles Barkley performs a powerful chaos dunk at a basketball game, inadvertently killing most of the people in attendance. As a result, basketball is outlawed, and many basketball players are hunted down and killed. That's like your origin story.
That is the origin for the game Barkley's Shut Up and Jam Gaiden.
Yes.
By the way, that is, some people were asking us to repeat the name of the game, and oh boy, I know what I'm going to play later. I remember that game existing, and like I probably have a note somewhere saying you should check this out. But now that you've reminded me, I have to play it.
Barkley is blamed for the chaos dunk and hunted by the B-ball removal department led by Michael Jordan.
Oh, the classic. The classic. This does sound incredible. We have to wait until Charles Barkley is a little older, and then maybe he'll just want some money and he'll be able to officially license this game.
You probably couldn't sell something like that, could you? Not without likeness rights.
Right. You would have to... You could probably skirt around it, like, just with changing some text. You know, call it, like, Barley's Shut Up and Jam Gaiden.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the actual game used, like, scanned in photos of Charles Barkley.
So you'd probably have to change some of that. You'd be versus, like, Mick Jordan.
You know, that's the sort of indie game that I'd really appreciate. Sort of thing that you'll never see put on your fucking indie game streaming service. The sort of thing that's just someone's mad stream of consciousness.
Right.
With no reverence for licensing law or anything like that.
That's where some of the true art can thrive. You know, that and Frog Fractions really blossoms in a realm. Speaking of, that is another example of an amazing kitchen sink game.
Frog Fractions.
Frog Fractions.
Maybe by a different definition of kitchen sink game. Because it's one of those things like Portal where you could sit down and play for an hour when you feel nostalgic for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it's just like an extraordinary stream of consciousness of a game, but it is like a very linear thing.
But mechanically speaking, it has, you know, once the fractions get harder, it has all of those elements to it that it, I mean, it is, it's an artistic everything in the kitchen sink game, but it has so many mechanics to it that I think it should be included in that list. They don't necessarily work well together. But they're there.
Did you play Frog Fractions 2?
Glitter Mitten Grove?
Yeah.
Yes.
It was hidden in Glitter Mitten Grove.
Hidden,
that's
right.
That's much more a kitchen sink sort of experience.
Sure.
I don't think I ever finished it. No. I found it's kind of all over the place.
Yes. Yeah. That's actually, that's the yes. Frog Fractions, it's very linear, but it has so many different mechanics. It has the fractions. It has the town management. It has the text adventure. It has the Echo the Dolphin section.
Right. But that's all part of the same, like, gag. And it's like saying WarioWare games have lots of mechanics. It's all Ooh. In service of a single through line. Semantics.
Semantics, maybe. But I understand your argument. Semantics, maybe, but I understand your argument. I'd say it's a little bit different just because, you know, in a WarioWare, I need processing time.
Fair enough. Technical fault, everybody.
just
display like a graphic saying technical fault, play some music while Jack thinks about this.
Okay, great. Hold on. That was just for the gag, though. While Frog Fractions is part of all of the same narrative through line, the physical mechanics are so different, I would still like to include it. Whereas something like WarioWare, sure, all of the things you're doing, like plucking a nose hair, snipping a wire, playing a key on a keyboard, are technically different. You're using the same physical mechanics to do them.
Right, but we were talking about focused design versus unfocused design. In Frog Fractions, it's a focused experience. You focus on everything that comes up to you, and with WarioWare as well. Whereas unfocused is stuff like Red Dead Redemption, where you float around, just idly do whatever pops up. It's more of a choice-based thing, really. And you don't really have a choice of what to do next.
Ooh, well, I guess
Frog Fractions and WarioWare.
That would be the difference, is whether it's thrust upon you or whether it's your choice. And I guess in my head, it's potato potato in that situation, where in both situations, you are doing a new thing mechanically. Whereas in WarioWare, you're essentially doing the same thing. But I guess we can just go down to semantics for those right. ones in particular. Thinking of a kitchen sink game that I think works, kind of a more mainstream idea of this, a little bit of everything, is something like Horizon Zero Dawn.
Well, kitchen sink design is inherently more mainstream by its very nature. Basically, all game genres started out as a single focused thing, and the constant push to be more impressive with each new game eventually led to the creation of the kitchen sink game.
Sure.
It's so impressive that you can do shooting and exploring and horse riding and all of that.
Yes.
So in their constant sense that they feel they need to push technology and all of that, the kitchen sink game is now pretty much the AAA default.
Yes.
The Jiminy Cockthroat, as we've discussed.
Oh, if you will, a little bit of stealth, a little bit of action. Oh, if you want to upgrade stuff, you can definitely do that, and it all matters, I swear.
But I think to really stand out and be a good game, you need to be really strong somewhere.
Okay.
I think Horizon Zero Dawn has a couple of strong threads to it. I think it's got very strong monster design.
Yes.
And, well,
that's
ask people who actually like that game, because I didn't like it that much.
Well, I as someone who really did like that game, yes, the highlights, the tent poles of that game were the giant robot dinosaur fights. Everything else I thoroughly enjoyed, but those were the real peaks that kept
tent
your interest.
Poles, exactly. Yeah. That's the word. You need tent poles. Biomutant had no tent poles.
It had nothing to write home to mama about, is what you're saying.
Exactly. If you got 30 words to pitch the game in, and you can only show one screenshot, what do you focus on?
Fighting robot dinosaurs. Boom.
Bam.
And what does Biomutant have? I didn't play Biomutant.
Nothing. Oh. That's my point. There's nothing to focus on there.
I think that's really fair. I think if you look at something, I know another game we slightly disagree on is something like Ghost of Tsushima, which I very much enjoyed, but I was all there for that samurai combat.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say the strong point of Tsushima was theming. It was very strongly themed around the samurai thing.
Ooh.
If you want to summarize the game, what do you show them? Samurai! having a big old... I actually did like that mechanic where you can go up to an enemy stronghold and just call them out.
Right.
They come on, let's settle this here and now like men. That was very on brand. Yes. That was very on theme.
That was absolutely on theme. So would you say that's similar as far as like my wishy-washy Red Dead Redemption 2 where it's like, cowboy, eh?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I guess you can't. That's something you can't really say about Biomutant. There's no real strong theme. It's you're a furry dude who's in a post-apocalyptic world and there's trees.
And you have a cool weapon and there's some technology, but it's old technology. But
And there's a good versus bad moral choice mechanic that's all over the place. And also, you can take over territories for your tribe, but it's not really that important.
Right. Versus samurai.
Samurai.
That's it. That's all you got to say. Oh, right. I'm in. I'm hooked. All right. No, I dig it. I dig this because I think that's like a connecting thread between both of them, which is even the kitchen, like the good kitchen sink games still have the specialization tentpole, whether it be in mechanics like exploration a la Breath of the Wild, or whether it be in theming like in Tsushima.
Hmm. So just to summarize before we like start thinking about super chats. If you're doing the focus game that focuses on one thing and focuses on it really well, then you have to expect that people won't play it for that long. Keep it in a sort of snacky experience.
Yes.
But if you're doing the broad design thing, you got to have something to focus on. You got to have your tent poles.
Absolutely. So the kink that I'm going to throw into the gears here is what about something like Stardew Valley?
I think Stardew Valley hinges on what the player wants out of it. Because Stardew Valley's thing is that it has a bunch of like threads through it. It has a bunch... It caters to a bunch of different incentives for gaming. And the way it's designed, you basically are free to pick and mix as much or as little of each of those threads as you want. If you want it to be just about farming, it could be just about farming. If you want to approach it like a story-based game, you can focus entirely on meeting the objectives, saving the town, impressing your dead dad. If you want it to be a creative experience, you could like create a winery with a big patch of vines shaped like Felicity Kendall's bottom. And if you want it to be about combat, you can go and hunt mines the whole time. You can do as much or as little as you want. Any one of those will get you success in that game.
So like Stardew Valley is the kind of the exception that makes the rules, as it has adjustable tent poles.
Yeah.
If I'm going to stick with this metaphor.
Stick your hand behind the curtain and turn a little wheel and make one tent pole go down, another one go up.
Sure.
That's how you approach that game.
Sure, sure. And I guess that's the, like, that should be the takeaway for developing a larger game, which is if you have... these, you know, your Jiminy Cockthroats, if you will. Like, if you are going to implement this stealth mechanic, how important is that to the overall experience? Can someone just go down a stealth path, or are you going to force them not to at some point just to broaden the experience?
There are games where stealth is the only way to get around. Like, you're playing something like Thief or Dishonored,
Right.
Where you basically just run from shadow to shadow the whole game.
Well, I Dishonored is, I haven't played Dishonored 1. I've only played Dishonored 2. But in Dishonored 2, you can choose, and it does have adjustable tentpoles, because you could go all stealthy, or you could go in swords a-swinging, and both are very satisfying experiences.
Yeah, it does a bit of the kitchen sink.
Mm-hmm.
The standard stealth or action choice given to the player.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of rare, though, in that it absolutely ties your choice to the branching moral plot. If you go all stealth and not kill things, you are you get locked into the good plot where you're a good person and nice things happen. But if you kill everything, you go in the bad plot. It's not that common for a game to judge the player that way. These days, they're all about, oh, play things your way. We can't tell you how to have fun. But Dishonored is a fairly rare example of the game literally judging you for your choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the way the plot unfolds.
Sure. I think for me it was more like, I don't care if I'm going to be the bad guy. I want to murder people. So I was just very comfortable being the bad guy.
I think that says a lot about you, man.
That's what I like in my escapism. Murder.
Well, better we murder in our escapism than in real life.
Absolutely.
Because society will have a problem with that.
Or at least we hope they will. Yeah. No, and I'm just trying to think about like the inverse, like you said, for the specialized game, like... Make sure that you have it prepared for those shorter experiences, which means checkpoints, save points, so they can pick up and move on later. Yeah.
And if you're gonna do one thing, like go deep, like your tip top thing, go deep mechanically.
Yes.
If you're gonna be appealing to a niche, then go all out. I've known developers who like make their money from niches. I used to know a developer who like. Exclusively made train sims, train games.
Okay.
Which is a niche. They're not like hugely popular, but the people who buy and interested in train sims will buy every bit of DLC you put out and they will pay any cost. But the trade-off for that is that they are very, very picky about accuracy.
Ooh, sure.
If you give them a Union Pacific E721 passenger coach, it had better be a fucking accurate depiction of a Union Pacific E741 passenger coach.
I'm sorry, but the train, the Union Pacific passenger train has 7 rows of seats, and everyone knows that it's historically accurate to have 8 rows of seat. I want a full refund.
That is literally what they were dealing with every fucking day of their lives.
I love that. I love that so much.
So yeah, if you're going for a niche, it had better be a niche that you yourself are really into as well.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about it.
No, I think that's great. I think it's great.
Let's super chat it up. These often drive discussion, I find.
Absolutely. Let's move on to super chat. Just as a reminder, here in the second half of Slightly Something Else, we read all your super chats and hopefully sparks a little bit of discussion. So get them in now before we say no more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we, there.
We like cash.
This is also true.
And then you get your name and your question read out, and then you get to feel important and included.
Ooh.
And we are thoroughly invested in encouraging that delusion.
Mm-hmm.
Scavenger gives $10 to say, what qualifies focused versus broad? Walk sims are focused in going forward. Rail shooters are point at screen and pull trigger. But there's broad like It Takes Two, and there's broad like Minecraft.
Well, Minecraft, right. I would say we've stumbled upon what a Minecraft is, which is adjustable tent poles, as you can choose your survival versus creative experience.
Yeah. And then It Takes Two is it has a lot of mechanics in it, but it's the WarioWare Frog Fractions thing we were talking about, where you're still on a single linear thread. You have to focus on the moment-to-moment experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's broad in the sense that as a whole has got a lot of stuff in it, but at any given moment, you're only doing one thing. In Minecraft, you could be doing any number of things.
Mm.
That's the difference, if you ask me.
Mm.
It's all about the mindset you have going into it.
Well, I haven't played It Takes Two, so I'm going to take your word for that. But like,
changes mechanics on a dime, that game.
And are the puzzles that minutes. Different? Like,
oh yeah, like that's one of the things that impressed me about it. It's a fairly long game, but every like few minutes, it just completely changes the mechanics, and it's always different. It's always something new.
That's great. That's great, because if you are going to have just one mechanic at any given time, we will get bored. So swap it up.
Pretty much. Kudlak13 gives $5 to say, which game was the better kitchen sink? Grand Theft Auto, Saints Row, Yakuza, or Witcher? Sort of the, imagine the four points of a square there.
Now, they're not saying which is the better game, just which is the better kitchen sink.
You're right. Well, in the definitions we've been working with, probably Grand Theft Auto. You can literally just go mad and blow up the map and get attacked by the police at any time.
Yeah.
In that, whenever you want. Saints Row as well, I guess.
I might say Saints Row. If I remember correctly, Saints Row had more weird stuff to do that didn't involve blowing stuff up.
Yeah, Saints Row leaned more into the wacky side of things that more characterized early GTA as GTA itself started getting a bit grittier.
Yeah. So I'm gonna go Saints Row, as in like The Witcher has different things to do, but I mean essentially you're fighting monsters. You're hunting and fighting monsters, no matter where on the map you're doing that.
And Saints Row is just mad.
Yeah, it's a mad Saints Row. So, well, I guess in Witcher you're gathering materials, you're mixing stuff together, you're bartering, you're trading. There's a little bit, but
I think what defines a good kitchen sink or sandbox game is how easily it is to switch from one thing to another.
Ooh,
and that's the sort of thing Saints Row does very well. You could be walking down the street and then, oh, I'm bored, rocket launch a police car. Whereas in which it's more a sort of slow steer from one thing to another.
Okay, I think you're absolutely correct. In Grand Theft Auto, obviously, they have a ton of other, like, you know, you can go gambling at the casino, you can go do this, you can just go golfing in Grand Theft Auto, if I remember correctly. And so that's like, yeah, there's a lot of things that you can do to say, I'm bored doing the missions. I want to go do the dishwashing mini game now. That's the good kitchen sink.
Yeah. Definitely a game for the people who are easily bored.
Yes.
Saints Row in a nutshell, I'd say. Kerem Kuzku gives $10. It always confuses me, the formatting there. To say, not a whole lot of super chats this week. No question, just felt a bit sorry for Nick. Well, thanks. But I think what we often find is the super chats start pouring in once we start reading them out.
Absolutely.
As seems to have been the case here.
But we appreciate your super chat in any case. Thank you.
The recurring commenter, whose name I still can't quite believe, Dylan Cunts, gives $4.99 to say, which developers have mastered the specialized and which have mastered the kitchen sink approach? Also, hi, Jack, we missed you.
Hi. I feel a flutter with emotion as to be missed.
Well, I wouldn't say exactly they've mastered it, but Ubisoft certainly have definitely crystallized their model for kitchen sink gameplay.
Yeah. Well, I think that we can look to, if we're looking for mastery, we can look to Rockstar, who just throws everything in there. And like we said, each individual mechanic is functional. It might not be perfect, but it's all functional within their game.
Yeah. Kind of a toddler's activity center sort of approach. And that's a lot of the activities aren't really related to each other. You can just go one thing, then do something completely different.
Right, but that's the idea. It's like, what do you want? You're a cowboy. What do you want to do? We give all these things, all these cowboy things. What do you want to do? You can do them all. It might not necessarily feel good, but you can do them all.
And as for developers who've mastered the specialized approach, I'd put Valve up there for Portal, but even in their games like Half-Life, they demonstrate how they can take their core game mechanic and just explore all of its potential.
Mm, sure, sure.
They do that very well when they do make games, which is once in a blue moon these days.
Yeah, I don't know if we can count them just because they, you know, they kind of hit their peak and then noped on out of game development in general. I think like we just, I don't know if there's like one specific developer we can say, ooh, who has mastered the one thing done well is Bennett Foddy.
Who's made one game.
He's made two games, right?
Oh yeah. What was the other one?
Quap.
Oh, that was him.
Yeah. He made Quap and he made Getting Over It. Both are unitaskers as far as mechanics are concerned, but oh boy, are they an experience.
Well, he certainly made his name with just with those two.
Or something, someone like Terry Cavanaugh, who did VVV, and did Super Hexagon. Beautiful unitasker games.
And Lucas Pope, of course, one of my favorites.
Oh.
Who did Papers, Please and Return of the Obra Dinn.
Yes.
And who's making a new game for, like, this weird console? This weird handheld console that's like
the
one
with the crank?
Yeah, you power it with a crank, and it has, like, one color graphics.
Yes. You don't.
And he's making a game for that.
Yahtzee, you don't power it with the crank. The crank is a controller.
Seriously? I assumed you powered it with it, because I figured from the graphics it can't possibly use like any power at all.
No, I've been keeping up on development. This is a real console that exists. It's just controller dynamic.
Shall we look up the name so it can be actual professionals?
I suppose you should. But I think you're absolutely right. In something like Papers, Please, you're just doing one thing, but the
playdate.
The Playdate, the handheld
console. The Playdate,
console
it's called.
Playdate.
I just Googled indie handheld with crank.
You're going to get some weird Google ads now.
Probably.
But agreed. One simple idea elevated by
hold
story.
Hold the phone. Hold the phone.
Holding.
I'm looking at this list of developers that have been secured to make Playdate games. Bennett Foddy is making one as well.
Fuck. You get
They're bringing in all the arty soloists.
Fuck yes.
Man, I should get in touch.
How do we get one now? Because I want to play all of these games.
I want to make a game for it.
Uh-oh. You heard it here first, everyone.
Well, doesn't that sound intriguing? Like the limitations... to design a game within the limitations of like only having one color and incorporating a crank, and then there's two buttons and a D-pad, and that's it.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's a really phenomenal idea.
I'm intrigued by the challenge of making a game for that.
so like we're mentioning a lot of people here, but I feel like the people that have mastered the unitasker is the indie sphere in general.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the kind of what we were like swimming around as a topic, that the broad game is the territory of the AAAs and the specialized game is now the territory of the indies.
Right.
Because they're simpler to make all around.
Well, and then they can focus on doing one thing incredibly well. We mentioned Celeste, Super Meat Boy comes to mind. Just a handful of all of these wonderful indie games that literally just do one thing, but do it incredibly well. And I know that's a bit of a cop-out just to say indie games, but any that we come up with will most likely be an indie game.
Pie Toast. gives £5 British pounds to say, long time fan of you both, glad to have finally caught you on stream, don't really have a question, just wanted to show my support, thank you very much. Pie Toast.
Pie Toast, that tickles me in a real big way.
So you're just gonna make a note
I'm
of
just
that.
Writing down pie toast just for me, just for later. Pie.
That could be your shopping list. Kerem Kuzku, again, gives $10 to say, here's an actual question. Would you consider Metroidvanias to be more kitchen sink or more focused?
Ooh.
Hard to say.
If we were to look at a Metroid game...
I think what defines them is they do tend to be task-oriented, but you can float around and pursue different tasks depending on your mood. But it's all in service of getting to the eventual finish. Like, you know, Dark Souls is a Metroidvania.
Yeah, and you're using the same mechanical language throughout, which is action platforming, right? You're shooting and you're jumping. Like, whether or not you're shooting and jumping as a ball or as a Samus, you're essentially doing the same thing.
Yeah. So, I'd say it's the focused approach. It's like the open world, but focused.
Yeah. I think if we look at something like Dark Souls, I guess this brings up an interesting question. A game like Dark Souls uses the same mechanical language throughout, but you can branch off as far as like classes are concerned or like weapons. So would that count in the kitchen sink, or is that part of the unitasker?
I guess it's kitchen sinky because the different weapons require different approaches and you can sort of experiment and play around. I've been replaying Dark Souls because I was stressed out a lot from my home life. Yeah. And I just wanted to practice self-care. And for me, that means replaying Dark Souls again.
Very fair.
Now, the first time I've been using really heavy weapons.
Oh, okay.
Been leaning in strength, and I've been using like the dragon's tooth and my massive greatswords, because my usual instinct is to go whippy, quick attack, quick roll behind things sorts of builds.
Oh, okay.
But I'm using the heavy weapons that you have to sort of like guess what the right moment is to initiate a really long-winded attack. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting the hang of it. It's interesting. It's fun.
I find that's usually my default weapons are like the big, dumb, heavy ones, because like there is that catharsis in just slamming something down. Just
pancake the shit out of the enemies and they can't do anything.
All right.
So kitchen sinky in that respect. You can play around with different gameplay styles, different combat styles.
Kitchen sink E.
Yeah. David Foster gives £4.99 British pounds to say, thoughts on games like Wonderful 101? It has that linear story and main gameplay loop, but those bloody mini games between some missions.
Oh, I don't know if that was made by the developer of Beautiful Joe, right?
Yeah, the Bayonetta people, Platinum Games. Wonderful 101 was their slightly out there idea, where you're like a superhero team and you control the entire team and you draw shapes to say where all the dudes in your team go.
Oh, okay.
Well, this is getting to the problem with the game, because the problem I had and a lot of people had is that it has a very steep learning curve and it's hard to figure out how to play the game.
Oh, okay.
It's hard to even describe how to play the game.
that's what we were talking about. If you got an elevator pitch, if you can't fit it into an elevator pitch, it might not be a specialized game.
And I'd say like Wonderful 101, Wonderful 101, like most of Platinum Games' output, is a game about mastering its mechanics.
Okay.
In the sort of Devil May Cry, Spectacle Fighter sort of area. It's about mastery, and that's what, you know... That's what a lot of the side content in those games, like optional missions, is about. It's about mastering the mechanics. Mm-hmm. So I'd say those games are focused in that respect.
But the specialization of the mechanics is in itself difficult to learn.
It's hard to learn, hard to master.
Sure. All right. That is very fair. I mean, I remember, I love Beautiful Joe. I still love Beautiful Joe with a deep, burning passion. And I remember seeing Wonderful 101 and thinking that I couldn't figure it out, so I didn't buy it.
That, as I say, was the problem a lot of people had with the game and why it's not really one of Platinum's big sellers after all this time.
That's too bad.
I think there was a Steam release of that eventually. I think it had a niche audience. I watched like a playthrough of it, and it seemed... You know, the people who figured it out liked it.
Sure.
We just need that community to rise it up again and teach us how to play it.
And you could tell it was created with love and passion. Mm. The people making it were, there was a lot of work put into it. Sort of a shame that it didn't find its broader audience.
Opening up a
tab. Okay. Scavenger gives $5 to say, listening to this, I think about tabletop RPGs. Kitchen sink in what it presents. You can play how you want, but a focused mechanic. Roll dice.
Hmm.
Well, you're more the tabletop gamer type.
Yes, I think you're essentially right. And you know, kind of what we were just talking about here, as far as like, Frog Fractions is concerned, where there's a lot of different things in tabletop role playing games. But yes, really, they all boil down to the one experience. Though, like, it all depends on how deep you get into it. There's a lot of homebrew stuff. There's a lot of different mechanics that you can introduce. I was watching a wonderful video. Someone made up their own specialized lock picking mechanic for Dungeons and Dragons. Because normally for a lock picking, you roll one die and you either do it or you don't. Like, that's it. And he made up a little mini game to like make it a little more interesting.
That's fun. I guess that's what makes tabletop RPG a little more free form and customizable.
Yes.
Which makes it a bit more of a broad experience.
Hopefully. But I mean, you're absolutely right. Like, at the end of the day, you're always just rolling some die to figure out So yes, like broad area, same mechanic. Fun to think about.
Red Dwarf 42, good name there, gave us $5 to say, are all immersive sims kitchen sink by definition? You know, I don't think people are generally clear on what an immersive sim is.
That's exactly what I was going to ask, so thank you for beating me to that.
I define an immersive sim as a game in the Deus Ex sort of mold.
Okay.
Or the most recent Prey game. I'm looking it up. Wikipedia defines an immersive sim as a video game genre that emphasizes player choice. Mm. So yeah, by definition, they would be kitchen sinky. So you can like do whatever you want with it.
Yeah.
It combines a comparatively broad array of player abilities with a lot of responses. That supports creative solutions to problems and emergent gameplay. Mm-hmm. So yeah, yes, I would say those are by definition kitchen sinky.
Like what you should think about is, in any game you're playing, could you just fuck around and play another game within the game? Which is actually something we forgot about when we talked about Witcher 3. Is you can just play Gwent. Yeah. So it's definitely kitchen sinky.
Yeah, the classic examples of. Well, the classic example of immersive sim in the modern sense would be System Shock 2. And yeah, you could literally just stop and play Minesweeper.
Right.
In the middle of a corridor, if you felt like it.
So yeah. Like, can you stop the main game to play another game within the game? Then it is a kitchen sinky.
Okay. Oh, man, this is like, this is turning into all semantic super chats.
I think that's what, by the way, that's what these always boil down to, is semantics.
Ian Cassidy gives $5 to ask, is Magic the Gathering a focused game or a kitchen sink? I don't know. I never played Magic the Gathering.
Neither have I.
That's for the big nerds.
That's for this.
Not like us cool nerds.
From what I know about Magic the Gathering, while each card has its own specific rules, you are still playing within the greater card game rules. So it is a specialized game, even though the pieces can do different things. So much,
all right, fine.
Much like D&D, a whole lot of lore, but essentially the same gameplay. So there.
Okay, so there. So there, Ian Cassidy.
Yeah.
Prozac Man gives $5 to say, Yahtzee, when will your next audiobook be released? Probably this year.
Ooh.
I'm don't think there's like an official date announced, but we are, but wheels are in motion. It's all written. We just need to record it. And I think publishers are keen to get it out before the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So keep an eye out.
Ooh, exciting.
Oh, I've got the cover art now. They sent me the cover art and it looks very nice.
That's as someone who genuinely enjoys your books, I am very excited.
You should be.
Fine then. Yeah, I am.
Nomad gives $4.99 to say, it seems like this is an auteurism versus player enjoyment debate. Kitchen sinks are in service of the player, but focused services the artistic vision. I think that's very fair to say, Nomad. I think a lot of the games we've cited are in the focused side of things. Auteur and appealing to a niche, and if you're nichey, it stands to reason that the person making it is someone who's interested in that niche.
I feel like we should choose our words very carefully there, because you made it sound like auteur versus player enjoyment, which implies that auteurism doesn't care about player enjoyment.
No. What I mean is it's auteurism versus universal appeal, I suppose.
There we go. I'm okay with that, because, yeah, I just, again, semantics, but that's, like, it's not like I'm doing this no matter if you like it or not, man, because I'm sure auteurs also care if people enjoy their game.
It's nice, but a lot of them are just sort of like trying to express something deeply within themselves.
Ooh. Well, then there you go. But yes, I do feel like you can't have too many cooks in the kitchen if you want to make a very specialized game. Hmm. I think that's very fair. But there are auteur games that are also kitchen sinky. I'm looking at you, Death Stranding.
Fair enough. Well, speaking of that sort of thing, Dylan Kuntz gives $4.99 to say, Eastern game design is specialized and Western design is more kitchen sink. Thoughts? I think it's only mainstream Western design is more kitchen sink. And even in Japanese games, there are certainly, they have their own kinds of kitchen sinky sorts of games. And there's a certain model of game that certainly seems to be getting a lot more popular. Because that's games that have relationship mechanics, weirdly.
Oh, okay.
I've been playing a new game we just got the review code for, which is called Scarlet Nexus. Took me a moment. Had to check my desktop. that's like a hack and slash RPG, but it's also got Persona-like mechanics where you build relationship with other people in your platoon.
Ooh, okay.
And it feels like I'm seeing a lot of that showing up in Japanese games lately. It happened in that Attack on Titan spin-off I played a few years back as well.
Sure. Well, and I mean, we can look at a lot of Hideo Kojima's work. Metal Gear Solid 5 in its entirety is several different kitchen sinks.
Early
stuff like I'm trying to remember the game that Stardew Valley is based off of.
Harvest Moon.
Thank you. Harvest Moon is a very kitchen sinky game. Even looking at JRPGs, early Final Fantasy games, doesn't Final Fantasy 3 have an entire chocobo breeding section where if you want to fuck off and just breed chocobos?
That's 7, I think.
Oh, that's 7. Okay. Well, sorry. Yeah.
But yeah, every Final Fantasy game has something like that.
Yeah. So I think there is a ton of kitchen sink, especially in JRPGs. So I know it's not confined to one region or another.
No, but there are different things that Japanese gamers like.
Yeah.
Apparently relationship mechanics is one of them.
Or the Yakuza series, correct? Like that has a zillion different things to do.
Yeah, but very different in flavor to something like Grand Theft Auto.
Sure.
Kurt Horsting gives $10 to say, been playing the new Guilty Gear and definitely feeling the benefits of a focus. It's a 1v1 fighting game with weird characters, great mechanics and metal music, and pretty much nothing else. Well, yeah, 1v1 fighters is like the purest definition of focused games, I suppose.
Absolutely, absolutely. And when done well, they're super awesome.
And very niche.
And very, very niche.
I mean, if you watch like videos of someone who's really into that sort of thing playing a few rounds of online Mortal Kombat 11 or something, and it's like they're talking another language. It's like, oh, I should have used the low cancel instead. I used the throw cancel. They used a meter burn. That was smart of them.
They used a meter burn. Like, now I can't counter because my hitbox detection will be 0.5 frames off of theirs.
I sometimes find, I've been finding myself drawn to watching that sort of thing, but I can't get my head around how one learns that kind of shit.
It's amazing.
It's fun to watch, at least.
It's, well, like you said, it's like you're on an archaeological dig, and just weird facts are flying past you. Very fascinating stuff, but also a perfect example of a very good unitasker, the fighting game.
And it all happens so fast as well. I mean, I don't know how you keep up, you young people brains, with your young people energy. Dale Hicks gives $5 Australian to say, hitting many tropes in a game is important. Oh, hang on a sec. Hitting many tropes in a game is important. Why Ghost of Tsushima was so successful, although no original or even great mechanics. Helps with immersion.
Because they were hitting those samurai tropes.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, that its strength was its theming. And that's why I did all right.
Absolutely. Well, and I think like we were talking about with Red Dead Redemption 2, with something like Horizon Zero Dawn, is it wrapped, or Breath of the Wild, it wrapped all of its mechanics around one solid selling point. And so, you know, even though it had the stealth, it had the haikus, it had the finding the different dyes for your outfits, it had the sword battles, it had the little sword skill things, it's all wrapped around this samurai flavor that made it a cohesive experience. It used a one specialization to hang all their kitchen sinks off of.
There you go. 4ED7FF gives $5 to say, would you consider Fez specialized or a kitchen sinker because of its single mechanic, but also kind of hand wavy objective? I call that a broad, chill out, zenny sort of game.
Ooh.
Because it is like, it does focus a bit on like the rotating stuff, but that's really more of a traversal thing to. And you're just supposed to sort of float around this big sandbox world.
Sure. That's an interesting example, though, of kind of like the inverse of what we've been talking about, right?
Yeah, it's indie and niche, but at the same time, it is that sort of floaty experience.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's indie, it's niche.
It's definitely unfocused. I would say.
But it does specialize. It has one core mechanic, but it doesn't have the urgency that these other games that we've been talking about has.
No. It certainly doesn't like push you down a linear path.
Right.
That's a unique example, I'd say. A uniquely caught in the middle sort of example there.
Agreed. Hmm. An interesting specimen in the specialized games. I like it.
This might be the last one. Don't think we've had any since this one. No, we haven't. So we'll say this is the last super chat. No more, please. We won't be reading out anymore. Donald Nabity gives $10 to say, would you consider Undertale a kitchen sink game with all of the changing mechanics in the combat system?
No.
That's a very focused experience. As I said, it's in my Steam category for games that you really want to devote your attention to when you're playing.
Right, and much like what we were talking about with WarioWare, while the individual, the moment-to-moment, like, physicality of the combat mechanics are changed, you are essentially doing the exact same thing.
Yeah, basically.
I don't know. Like, how do you put that better? Like, while your inputs might be different, the reason why you are inputting them is the same.
I would say it's all on the same thread.
Ooh, sure.
You're following the same thread, sure, the whole time.
I like that, but yeah, no, very singularly focused, much to its credit.
Great game.
It's a great game. Everyone thinks it's a great game. You know why? Because it's a great game.
Yeah, because it is. Funny that.
It's great when everyone can just agree on something. Like, yeah, it's a great game.
Well, on that note, thank you for all your super chats. It's what helps us keep going and make random content that doesn't have to appeal to the algorithm or pause for 5 minutes to try to sell you a pair of shitty earbuds or whatever.
That's right. Well, this week we're sponsored by... crap. Like, I have so much crap on my desk. The Xbox controllers. Buy an Xbox controller. Absolutely. We get to just sit here and have a lovely conversation about different game mechanics, and I think that's wonderful. So thank you all for watching and or listening to this. Thank you all for your super chats. Yahtzee and Nick will be back next week to talk about something else, I'm sure.
Yes. Slightly something else, even.
Whoa! We just did it. That's the outro. Bye, everyone.
Follow us all on Twitter. I'll see you on Wednesday for Zero Punctuation.